This is PCJ Radio International.
Media Network Plus, produced and presented by Keith Perron.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the program. We begin today by talking about two journalists for Radio France International, Claude Verlon and Ghislain Dupont. They are based in Mali and had just finished doing an interview with a separatist group in the northern part of the country. They were kidnapped and then assassinated. Now, working as a foreign correspondent in a hotspot, you always run the risk of this kind of thing happening. It happens on a daily basis across the African continent, and also in Latin America and other parts of the world. There's been a big outcry, not just from the government of France, but also the CEO of France Media Monde, which is the company that owns Radio France International. Marie-Christine Sargos said that she hoped their deaths won't stop journalists going into dangerous places.
With regard to this kind of barbarity, we can't have a bodyguard for every journalist. So what's being put in question here is giving a voice to those on the ground, which was our goal. What can we do when faced with this kind of barbarity? Stop going to certain places? Stop providing information? I want to say no.
For more information, we're now joined by our African correspondent, David Smith, on the line from South Africa.
Oh my, Mali's been in a very difficult condition for a couple of years. I mean, what amounts to a civil war has been brewing either at high speed or low speed over the last couple of years. There was a military coup after a couple of Islamic fundamentalist groups took control of the northern part of the country, the part of the country that borders Algeria and Niger. And as the northern rebels were moving south towards the capital, Bamako, a cry for help went out first to the African Union to send in troops to help fight this threat. And when the African Union was not able to move quickly to send any sort of peacekeeping or peace-enforcing force, a call went out to the French. The French military arrived with a military group they call Operation Serval, and retook most of the north from the Islamic rebels. I say most of the north because there's one particular area in the northeast around a town called Kidal, K-I-D-A-L, not far from the Algerian and Niger border, that is, for all intents and purposes, sort of the wild northeast. It's almost out of control. There are French troops there. There are some Malian troops, and there are some troops belonging to a new, as of July 1st, UN peacekeeping force called MINUSMA. But there aren't enough of them in place to bring the place totally under control. And it's because of this chaos that the two French journalists from Radio France International were abducted on Saturday, and very shortly afterwards killed, and their bodies dumped on the side of the road about 15 kilometers outside of the town of Kidal.
Now, Claude Verlon and Ghislain Dupont have had, of course, a lot of experience covering various different parts of Africa. Was this the kind of place that, for example, if you are a foreign journalist and you're going into, you do have to take a lot of precautions? Would they have been prepared, that something like this could have happened?
Well, several questions there, Keith. I think the most important thing to say is that if there are any two journalists who are accustomed, who were accustomed to dealing with extremely difficult situations, it's certainly Ghislain Dupont and Claude Verlon. Claude Verlon is more the technical guy. He's the guy who makes sure that there'd be a connection to the satellite and a good clear line whenever they were sending a report or sound from extremely isolated areas back to RFI's headquarters in Paris. And Ghislain Dupont, I don't underestimate when I say she was one of the very best journalists ever to have covered Africa for radio. And I say that with very first-hand experience. I had the enormous pleasure of working with Ghislaine Dupont shortly after we launched Radio Okapi in the Democratic Republic of Congo. And Ghislaine came for several months to help train the new team that would become Radio Okapi and would become the radio of reference for the DRC. And I should say that Ghislaine Dupont was one of the great Congolese experts as far as radio journalism is concerned. So to get back to your question, yes, they would be very prepared. Did they know it was dangerous? Of course they knew. These are people who took chances to get stories and get behind stories that most other people never even tried to get. The kind of stories that most people would get either embedded with the military operation or sitting behind their desks and making phone calls. Ghislaine Dupont did not sit behind a desk, nor did Claude Berland. They went out and spoke to the people who were making the news.
You know, this is something, especially over the last 15 years, that we've seen a lot of correspondents overseas and either getting abducted or getting killed. And just recently, I was talking to a reporter who worked for the BBC for nearly 50 years. He's retired now, and he said there was a time when a foreign journalist can go into a hotspot, like he went into Vietnam, he covered the Korean War. He said you can actually go in certain areas that, let's say, were difficult or, you know, soldiers couldn't get to, but as a foreign journalist, you were sort of protected because the other side definitely wanted to get their word out. What do you think has happened?
Oh, my. Well, what you said about, you know, all sides want publicity. There, you know, there's the old cliche, there's no such thing as bad publicity, there's only publicity. You know, another classic case in Africa is the head of the Lord's Resistance Army that comes from northern Uganda, where Joseph Kony leads an army made up to a large extent of child soldiers. And the Ugandan army has claims to have been chasing Mr. Kony for many years now and hasn't found him. But yet journalists managed to find him from time to time and interview him. That leads to a bigger question as to whether or not the Ugandan army actually really wants to find Mr. Kony, but we can save that interview for another time. Is it more difficult now? I think because of communications, the development of communications from very isolated spots, now that we have satellite phones and we can, you know, much of the continent, this continent that is linked with cell phone communication. I mean, we know a lot more about what's going on in difficult areas than we did before. If a journalist was going into a hotspot, often we didn't know about what they were doing, who they were talking about, until they went back to their home office and filed their piece. Now we know right from the source, right from the hotspots, what's going on as it happens. So maybe it's, to some extent, it's technology that's changed the rapidity in which we receive information from hotspots.
And what about for local journalists working in Mali? Do they face the same kind of challenges or even worse?
Oh, absolutely. Local journalists are killed all the time on this continent. I mean, the place where most local journalists die with far too much regularity is Somalia, the whole Horn of Africa area, where Somalian journalists are, you know, several times a year, sadly many times a year, being killed. The problem is, you know, local journalists don't always have the same international support group that somebody from a large international media house like Radio France International will have. That doesn't mean that one is better or more important or less important than the other. You know, our RFI has a worldwide network of listeners, something in the region of 40 million listeners, where, you know, take a community radio station in Somalia, they have several thousand listeners who don't have a lot of political clout. The president of the country is not likely to go on to national radio and TV and make an appeal for safety in their area. Whereas, you know, the moment news of the assassination of Ghislaine Dupont and Claude Berland reached Paris, you know, French President François Hollande and the head of RFI were very quick to make statements condemning what they justifiably call an onerous act.
I was just watching a press conference given by Marie-Christine Sargos, the CEO of France Media Monde, which owns Radio France International. And she said that, you know, she said she would like to come here and say that we're going to stop sending journalists there, but she says that's not going to happen.
Well, let's hope this is not just PR coming from her. I mean, it's a difficult time for anybody at RFE or in the business. I'm sure people at BBC and Deutsche Welle and other large international broadcasters are all questioning the work they're doing in difficult theaters right now. You know, I sincerely hope, for the sake of access to information and freedom of media, that RFE continues to cover Africa, especially the difficult parts of Africa, the way it always has. I think they will, but you know, we can understand if they take a moment to pause and think about what their next steps are going to be. Ghislaine Dupont and Claude Verlan were in northeastern Mali preparing for a special on the difficulties facing the Kidal area of Mali that was going to be aired on RFE later this month. That special program has now understandably been cancelled. How many other things will be cancelled because of this horrible event? I hope not many. I've listened to other journalists from RFE speak since the assassination, and I've only heard one message coming out, and that is, you know, the work that Ghislaine Dupont and Claude Verlan were doing will be continued by others.
David Smith, thank you very much for joining us today.
My pleasure as always, Keith.
And you're listening to Media Network Plus, coming to you from PCJ Radio International. Now, since we began this show, every time we talk about a transmitter site, it's usually doom and gloom. For example, we talked about the closing of the Sackville Relay Station in Canada that was once operated by Radio Canada International. And recently, Spanish Foreign Radio, or Radio Exterior de España, announced that they were going to be closing their Costa Rica relay. So this seems to be, well, you can say a trend, right? Well, guess what? I think this is the first for us, the first time ever, that we're here to talk about shortwave news in a positive light, and a relay station in a positive light. To find out more, we're now joined on the line by our good friend Jeff White at WRMI in Miami. Jeff, I'm going to hand, as they say, the microphone over to you.
Hi, Keith. Well, I am glad to be able to bring you some good news.
It is quite funny because usually, you know, people have said to me, they said every time you talk about shortwave or have a guest on, it's all doom and gloom. But this is actually rather good news. So I'm going to hand it over to you now, and I'll do a little bit of a drum roll. Dum-da-da-dum.
Well, to make a very long story short, the unexpected has happened, the unplanned has happened, and I'm still finding it a little hard to believe myself, but it was suggested to me by a few people when WYFR went off the air at the end of June that because of our proximity here that Radio Miami ought to consider taking it over. And my wife jokingly said, well, if we win the lottery, maybe we could. But that didn't happen. But in a way, I guess we did, because we had some tremendous help from Dan Elier, who was WYFR station manager from the time it was built until the time it went off the air, and who was my predecessor as secretary treasurer of the National Association of Shortwave Broadcasters here. He put us in touch with the family radio people in California, and there were an awful lot of obstacles that had to be overcome, and things that I in the beginning thought could not be overcome. But one obstacle after another just kept falling away, and everything started falling into place. And here we are, after just several weeks of negotiations, I guess. But it looks like it's happening on December 1st. We're going to be shutting down WRMI in Miami, the transmitter site, that is. We'll keep our office in Miami. And that will be the last day of transmission. This should be November 30th, and then the next day, December 1st, we'll be moving those transmissions to the WYFR site in Okeechobee.
So Jeff, you're going to be going from 150 kilowatt transmitter to much higher power transmitters then.
Yes, there are currently 13 100 kilowatt transmitters in Okeechobee and one 50 kilowatt transmitter. And we're going from one antenna, one and a half, it's sort of been working sometimes, to 23 antennas going in all directions in a circle around the globe, around the transmitter building there. So it's an incredible change.
So the frequency that you're currently using, 9955, will that still be in use, or will you also now have the option, more options of using different frequencies?
Yes, we will continue our, most all of the programming that is currently on 9955 kilohertz will continue on 9955 kilohertz, but instead of coming from Miami, it will come from Okeechobee. However, we are also making the site available to other international broadcasters who are interested in, using the facility. We certainly can't occupy 13 transmitters 24 hours a day. So there are, I can mention, for example, Pan American Broadcasting from California is going to be transmitting its Radio Africa programming from Okeechobee for, I believe, 9 hours a day. In addition to Radio Miami, and we're working on several other contracts with other organizations that seem to be interested in using Okeechobee as well.
So let me ask you.
Of course, those will be on other frequencies.
Right. Now, this transmitter site, it's been around for a number of years. What kind of transmitters are there, and have they been well maintained?
They've been impeccably maintained. They are, some of them, quite old. Going back to, I think even one or two of them may have come from the original site in Scituate, Massachusetts, and been moved down there. Some of them are quite a bit newer, from the 1980s, but they've been impeccably maintained by engineers I have found that really know what they're doing, and have cared for this site very, very well over the years. Some of them have been there for 28, 30 years or more, and so they know this place inside and out. Everything is in really good shape, and it has its age. It's all in working order. And in fact, up until June 30th, it was working.
Well, age doesn't mean anything. The BBC Far East Relay Station in Singapore, which was built in the 60s. Is still cranking out every day programs from BBC and other broadcasters just as it did when it first went on the air. So let me ask you then, with this site at Okeechobee, if you compare it, let's say, to other shortwave transmitter sites in the United States, is it one of the largest?
Well, I think it is. I was told that it was the largest in the United States in terms of number of transmitters and antennas, 13 transmitters and 23 antennas. There's at least one other site I can think of that has more power, and that would be WEWN in Alabama, because I believe they have 400 or 500 kilowatt transmitters and probably a large number of antennas as well. I'm not sure the exact number, but they probably have more power than Okeechobee does, but they don't have as many transmitters. The only other one that I think would come close would be VOA or IBB in Greenville, North Carolina, which I believe still doesn't have quite as many transmitters and antennas overall as Okeechobee. And could be mistaken on that, but in any case, it's big.
Jeff, thank you very much for talking to us today. It's really nice to hear some good news, actually, for a change coming from your part of the world.
Well, thank you, Keith, and we're glad to be able to bring it to you.
And I was speaking there with Jeff White from WRMI. We actually put a link at the PCJ website for more information on this. If you go to our homepage, www.pcjmedia.com, and you scroll down on the right menu, you'll see a link that says WYFR Shortwave Facility returns as WRMI. We included some information there because the target date, as Jay said, will be December the 1st. Now, because of this, we are going to be doing a special program in the month of December, just before Christmas, and it's going to be quite fun. The only thing I will tell you right now, because I don't want to give too much away, is that the frequency we will use and the time we will use will be that was once used, that was once used by Radio Nederland, and the program will be 80 minutes long. We'll tell you more developments on that as we get closer to the date. Now, on November the 3rd, PCJ Radio International made a frequency change for listeners in Southeast and East Asia. We were on 11835 kilohertz for quite some time, but because of the new B13 schedule, we had a number of interference issues. We've now moved to 11990 kilohertz. So do check it out and let us know how it's coming through. You're listening to Media Network Plus from PCJ Radio International. And now, what can we expect over the next 7 days propagation-wise? Here's our propagation editor, Dan Hensley.
Here is propagation from November 9th to November 15th, 2013. A 10.7-centimeter flux starting out at 135 on November 9th, dropping down to 130 on November 10th and 11th, back up to 135 November 12th, up to 140 November 13th through November 15th. The A index starts out at 5 November 9th, up to 8 November 10th, spiking on November 11th at 10, down to 8 on November 12th and 13th, continuing downwards to 5 from November 14th to the 15th. The KP index starts out at 2 on November 9th. November 10th to November 13th, we'll see a KP index of 3, down to 2 on November 14th and 15th. The Sun continues to be active with coronal mass ejections. More eruptions are in the offing. NOAA forecasters estimate a 45% chance of M-class solar flares and a 10% chance of X-flares. One such eruption this week caused a magnetic crochet. This week, we have sunspots 1982, 84, and 85 almost right on top of each other to the Sun's eastern edge. Just to the west of that, we have sunspots 1987, 89, and 90. 1890 has a beta-gamma-delta magnetic field that harbors energy for X-class solar flares. See our website for more at www.pcjmedia.com/RPROP. Back to you, Keith.
And for more information on what we can expect propagation-wise, you can check out the propagation section at our website that Dan Hensley does update during the week. Now, the month of December is just around the corner, and as always, we're now busy putting together our bloopers program. And, it was funny because I was compiling the show for a while now, and I'm thinking, we only have 30 minutes. We only have 30 minutes, and I have way more than I need. And then I thought, well, some of them are not really that good. So I decided, if there's any listeners out there who have recorded stuff off air that is funny, strange, peculiar, send them to us, and we will include them in the program. The email to contact us is mnp@pcjmedia.com. That's mnp@pcjmedia.com. So we look forward to hearing from you. If you want to listen to this program again or catch past editions, it's very easy to do. Our website is www.pcjmedia.com/Media Network Plus, all one word. That's www.pcjmedia.com/Media Network Plus, all one word. And you can also listen to this program in various different ways, either FM, AM, internet, satellite, and, of course, shortwave. So do let us know how you're listening to the program. And if you have any story ideas, you can also send them along to the address that I gave just a moment ago. Anyway, guess what? We are now out of time. Yes, completely out of time. It's amazing how time flies when you're having fun, I suppose. So until next time, friends, this is Keith Pelham saying so long, take care. We'll see you in 70 days. 70 days. That was a blooper for the new year, wasn't it? I should say 7 days. 73 and 88 to the ladies.
Hear PCJ Radio while on the go with Stitcher Smart Radio. Stitcher is a free news, talk, and entertainment mobile app available for your smartphone. Downloading is quick and easy. Just find Stitcher from the App Store. Then, during registration, hit the promo code box and enter PCJ to get automatically entered to win $100. For more information, go to www.pcjmedia.com and click on the Stitcher logo on the right menu. PCJ Radio on the go with Stitcher Smart Radio.